Trigger warning, Death and Friends is not a podcast for the light of heart. Many dark and serious subjects will come up. Listener discretion is advised.
Dude, I'm so glad we're done with the dark stuff this season. Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yes.
What? Why are you saying it like that, huh?
Nothing. I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, but you have a weird look on your face.
Well, that's my face.
Well, I'm well aware that's just your face, but it's like weirder than usual. It's like, you know.
I don't know what you mean.
It's like, why? Wait, why are you looking over there?
Over where?
Yeah, you just looked at, there's nothing up. You're doing it again, see? It's, oh my God, you're doing the gym face. I didn't imagine getting near a camera, aren't you?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You just did it again! Nash, identity theft is not a joke. You could get sued. Probably.
Hi.
Stop.
Okay. Today's not going to be a good day for you, bud.
Why? What could... Oh, God. Nash? Mm-hmm. Is that a Dunkin' Donuts?
Oh!
We're back in Boston, aren't we?
We sure are.
Why does the most fucked up shit happen in this piece of shit city? I can't with this! I hope it sticks into the seek soon! Welcome back, Skeleton Army. I'm Angel, and this is my sleep paralysis demon, Nash.
Thanks again for doing the ritual that makes me corporeal.
You really give me no choice, so.
Aww.
Just paint the goddamn picture so we can get this over with.
You got it, amigo. But first, to our lovely friends here. Hi. What's up?
Don't you ever wink at me again.
Wasn't for you, bud. It was for her.
Okay, again, audio podcast. No one can see you except for me.
Right. Okay. So it's 1675 and we're in Boston, Massachusetts, land of the free, home of the brave, but make it ironic. Just as the first warning of what will probably be like 15, this episode is going to be a huge bummer.
Yes, but as the saying goes, something, something, don't learn history, something, something. What are we talking about again?
Yes, that's the saying. So beautiful in its original language.
Quiet you.
No. But before we jump into things, though, I want to be serious for a second. Anytime we chat about settler colonization and its history, it's important to remember that much of the agency and voice of the colonized group is lost, and that's the point of most colonization from the colonizer's perspective. Eradication is the primary goal. So when we go back to unlearn some of the major narratives that are passed down to us, unpacking and unwinding those narratives is imperative to talking about those histories.
Whenever possible in today's episode and in the episodes that prefaced...
Hell yeah, dude.
...this one, we make it a top priority to find stories and records from the colonized group and intertwine or directly combat the accepted historical narrative, which is nearly always a history written or rewritten by the white man.
Even when it paints the natives in a bad light, and actually, especially then, because assuming that they were constant victims of every act of violence and were constantly outwitted or trapped by the colonists continues to erase their history and agency. They were full participants in this history, even when the records tried to erase them, and that means allowing them the historical space to plot revolutions and plan raids and weaponize violence and also to betray each other.
Because that's what the white people are doing too, so.
It's also important to remember that indigenous people are not a homogenous group. Though today's events largely begin with the Wampanoag tribe, this war eventually encompasses the entire New England area and into modern-day New York. So the war is basically inescapable for all the tribes in this physical space.
And those tribes had different histories, cultures, belief systems, and past with each other. For the sake of brevity alone, we will mainly focus today on the Wampanoag perspective. Also, we're a comedy podcast, so there's already a lot.
Okay.
So when we last chatted about pre-revolutionary Boston, we left the English settlers and the Wampanoag tribe engaged in a mutually agreed upon destruction kind of peace treaty, where both sides need the other for their continued survival.
One side more than the other.
Yeah, that's not an equal weight for certain.
And the Wampanoag probably started to feel like maybe things were going their way. They'd hoped in late autumn when the English celebrate Thanksgiving, and that's in heavy quotation marks. I'm talking like the text is normal, but the quotes are like in bold. By getting drunk on the beach and firing their guns off and totally forget to invite the people that saved them. So, you know.
Mm.
So it's like, oh, but this party's for our buddy Dave. Where's Dave? Well, we don't know.
We forgot to tell him it was happening. I mean, isn't it nice that all Thanksgivings in the history of North America have been absolute shit shows filled with disillusioned privileged white people getting too drunk and forgetting the entire point of the holiday? Like, isn't it cohesive?
I think the word you're looking for is sad.
Oh.
So let's talk about war.
Webster's Dictionary defines war as...
Absolutely not.
But...
No.
Well, now I want to pout. But I won't, because we're all busy people. But Jake, please add pout to my calendar for an hour this afternoon between my lasagna tailgate party and the Met Gala.
And wait, Jake is your assistant now? What the fuck? Why don't I have an assistant?
All set, Nash. Just a reminder, your date with Zoe Kravitz was moved to Saturday evening, so you could attend the Emmys.
Right, yes. Thank you.
What the fucking fuck? What?
So it's 1675, and it's been, hang on, let me do the math here.
It's been 84 years.
No, it's been, carry the one, 55 years. Thank you, calculators. And more English people have gotten on boats and moved right into the surrounding areas. And man, they're getting more and more surroundy every year.
The English spread out from Plymouth pretty substantially in 1630. King What's-His-Face, who gives a shit, gives more English people a charter for land that he does not own and or have any entitlement to whatsoever, so they could settle north of Plymouth to form the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which is modern day...
You got it.
Oh, why did you I can, drink that?
Can,
I don't
know. You can do this.
It made me feel it was Krispy Kreme. But, jeez. Boston. Oh, God.
Yeah. It's King Charles I.
That's what I said.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
The Wampanoag are getting pushed farther and farther to the outskirts of the rapidly growing English settlements, and their peace gets a little less comfortable with every passing year. We can't really overstate this, but boy, are we gonna try.
Yeah.
The Wampanoag need access to the English goods, as they're a far stronger currency for trading, and they continue to have enemies on all their sides, for which the English threat is pretty effective at tamping.
But the English didn't make it easy, or even just a little bit difficult to keep the peace. Because they're, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? White people. And white people always need more of everything. There is a hole in their heart that they need to fill. So they keep taking and pushing for land. And then they start a fun little side hustle called convert all the natives to Christianity.
That does sound fun. And by fun, I mean Jesus Christ, of course.
Yeah. Jesus Christ indeed, Nash. Jesus Christ indeed. It should be ominous. Hey, Dom, could you add like a scary lightning noise here?
Ka-chow.
By mid-century, the English have had some success in these conversions, and they set up neat little communities called praying towns, which are cute little English-created towns for natives that they'd converted on land they'd stolen or underpaid for. They refer to the inhabitants of these towns as, quote, praying Indians, end quote, just to continue the, you know.
the thing. Here's where shit really starts to pop off. It's 1661-ish. The date is sort of contested, it's fine. But sometimes around then, Massasoit, now roughly 80 years old, does a quick die, and his son, Metacomet, takes over as sachem.
But the English call him Philip, because honestly, why the fuck wouldn't they, really? Just...
We mentioned this earlier. There's nothing is too much for these people.
Except for respecting other people's culture and heritage, and their right to exist.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to call him by his actual name for this episode.
He doesn't even look like a Philip.
Okay, remember the praying Indians from earlier?
You mean like a full minute ago?
Yes, we try to keep these, you know, tight, so.
Mm.
Well, one such man named John Sassamon, who had converted a few years prior, gets concerned after Metacomet's rise to power and tells the English settlers that he heard a rumor that Metacom is going to gather the troops and try to push the settlers back a bit.
The English are like... Fuck nah, fam.
Nah, and they dog.
Nah, bro. I don't even think so.
Hey, fool. Hey, dog. I don't like that shit, dog. Like, straight up, bro. Nah, fuck that, dog. Nah, let's get this, perro.
We're giving the English way too much credit.
We really are.
They arrest Metacom and they bring him to trial, where they admit that they have absolutely zero proof. And honestly, I think that's actually kind of a surprise, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
They let him go, but they warn him that if they hear anything else, even if it's not true, they're going to confiscate the natives' guns and take their land, which, to be honest, is kind of not really a threat, but something they're like actively doing already. Mm-hmm. So
Metacomet goes home and probably just a little baby, pissed off. Then on January 29th, 1675, John's body is discovered with his neck snapped floating along the Assawomset Pond. And everyone's like, oh, gee, I wonder who could have done this.
What? Just look at him. He's just floating. There he is.
True crime girlies roll up. Dom, play the sound to attract them.
It was supposed to be a happy marriage, but then white people shit happened.
The English arrest three Wampanoags, and on eyewitness testimony from a fellow Christian convert called Patuxent, and with a jury of both Englishmen and Wampanoag leaders, which is the most inclusive thing that Puritan New England has ever done, really, convict the three men of murder and sentence them to hanging. They are executed on June 8, 1675.
Despite some Wampanoag elders being involved in the jury and sentencing, Metacomet and others think the conviction infringes on the sovereignty of the Wampanoag people, which, yes, and tensions escalate on both sides. The English are terrified of what Metacomet might have begun to plan even prior to the execution, and the Wampanoag are increasingly weary of the English incursions into their land and laws.
The English are like, is this the consequences of my own actions?
Yeah, they were already worried about cancel culture at the time. This woke mind virus that the natives...
He might be planning a what? Because of what? No.
What? It's no. We're not wrong. It's the children who are out of touch.
Yes. On June 20th, retaliations begin. Maybe with Metacomet's knowledge and maybe without it. A small group of Pocahontas attack the Plymouth village of Swansea. It takes them a few days, but they burn it to the ground and kill several of its inhabitants.
Hell yeah, brother. Right. The English decide the time has come. So then the English do a reverse Uno card, and on June 28th, they attack what today is Bristol, Rhode Island, and destroy that Wampanoag village, and things do not get better from there.
Over the following months, small incursions are inflicted on both sides, and then in September 1675, the English officially declare war on the Native Americans. And this is where things go from shitty to, okay, what the fuck, you guys?
The war gets fought all over New England, and eventually other nearby tribes get brought into the fray by just geography. They're just like, I guess they're fighting in our lawn. And it's not just raids and battles either. Welcome to one of Nash's favorite topics, guys.
Hey. Remember that time we talked about Troy and weaponizing death ways?
Hey, what if you didn't smile while saying that?
Ah, no. Okay. So one way this war is fought is with corpses.
Jesus Christ, Nash!
Before I get into this, please note that archaeological and historical evidence suggests that this is not an uncommon war tactic for Native Americans at the time. But the English records are loaded with descriptions of corpse mutilation and the English bodies being left out to the elements as an act of additional violence. To the natives, this is likely just a part of how wars are conducted. For the English, though, well, I'll let historian Dr. Eric Seaman, yes, that's his real name, we're adults, give you a better idea. Quote, rotting and mutilated corpses became the dominant English imagery of Indian savagery and the leading rationalization for the fury with which they themselves attacked and mutilated Indians, end quote.
Well, that's something.
It sure is. It's important to also remember that this is, in part, due to how familiar the natives are with English death and burial customs. Getting the savages to convert to Christianity is a big part of the English settlement goals, and so it's pretty likely that, because of how much the natives knew about Christianity as a result of that, it's easy to weaponize those belief systems into a fear tactic, which, obvious violence aside, it's a pretty crafty Uno reverse card, actually.
I feel like I already made that joke, but fine.
Yeah, I wasn't listening to you.
Cool. Hey, remember that there are not an insignificant amount of praying villages in New England now that the converted natives living there? You know?
Yeah.
You'd think the English would be like, hey guys, cool, thanks for being on our side. But no, instead they come to an absolutely unfathomable conclusion that they can't trust them since they were born as natives. And they could also easily be spies, and also they're not white. So in October 1675, they are inspired by future baby Hitler, and they gather all the members of the praying towns and put them on a nice little island in Boston Harbor.
Colonial records indicate that there are between 500 and 1,100 natives interred on Deer Island, but native resources believe that the number is much higher than that, since the colonists interred some non-converted natives there as well, and those aren't counted in the English totals.
It's important to remember that they are also kept there over winter, that the colonists warned them specifically that if they set foot off the island, they'd be shot and killed immediately. So the choice was starve to death, freeze to death, be shot to death, or get one of the many diseases the population share back and forth and just died from that, I guess.
The war goes on for nearly another year, but then on August 12th, 1676, Metacomet is shot and killed by a Wampanoag sub-sachem called John Alderman, who has converted to Christianity and joined the side of the English.
The English waste very little time celebrating the end of the war, and in true English fashion, here begins the fucked up shit.
Yeah.
They have the body of Metacomet drawn and quartered, even though he's already very much dead, and then continuing on this trend like they were Achilles at Troy.
Love the reference.
Thanks. They distribute most of the body parts as war trophies and put his head on a spike and display it outside Plymouth for the next, hang on, let me check my notes here. 20 years? Holy shit.
20? God damn, why bother even taking it down after that?
Oh, hang on, checking my notes here. Yeah, they did it.
Oof.
It gets stolen by people who are like, hey guys, I think this is a little fucked up, y'all. And they eventually get it returned to his descendants.
Black death, polio, spontaneous combustion. Dying comes and after death comes decomposition. It may seem sad and also gross, but here you are and here's your host. Not an actual doctor, but it's medical facts with Dr.
Oh, okay. Dom, really? I just, okay, I don't really have anything to talk about for this, so.
Okay, he's just really just deciding things on his own now. Just, okay. Well, we've probably never talked about drawing and quartering before. Do you have something?
Okay. Yeah, sure. Well, it didn't kill Metacomet because he was already dead, but it was formerly used for execution. Sorry. Hang on, let me put my coat on. Alrighty, I feel powerful now. So drying quartering is fun little invention of, you guessed it, England in the 13th century. It is usually the mode of execution for those convicted of treason, and if you got awarded this punishment, you just go in knowing your entire last day is gonna fucking suck. Just a lot. Just. Yeah. First you get drawn, literally, they drag you to the executioner by a horse along the ground. And that's genuinely the most enjoyable part. After that, you get hung, but not to your death, because, I mean, no one wants to bust their load early. And then you get disemboweled while you're hanging there. So once you die for, like, the third time, or get close to dying from that, they behead you. And then they attach each of your arms and each of your legs to four horses, all of them facing opposite directions. Then they spook the horses by telling them some real fucked up shit in their ear.
Shh. Squirt is pee. Get on, yeah. Yeah.
And your body rips into a bunch of pieces.
Well, that all sounds excessive.
The English way, done brutally and unnecessarily, or not at all.
Yeah, I really wish they'd gone with door number two. Anywho, I bet you're wondering what's going on at Deer Island after the war ends. We all are. Well, about half of those interred on the island are dead by August 1676. And that's just what the English recorded, so, like, just keep that in mind.
Ah, good. At least it wasn't out of character then.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So the English wrap up the war, and then they're like, hey, didn't we put a bunch of people on an island somewhere? Do you remember that? Henry, do you remember that?
Fun facts with Nash.
Dear God, we've really got to change the fun part of this theme song, because zero part of what happens next is fun. If you were hoping that the English took the little boat up to Deer Island and were like, our bad guys, come on home.
Oopsie.
Man, are you about to have your sweet little heart crushed into pieces? Instead, they wrote up and they're like, hey, team, how's it going? How was starving to death for the last few months? Did you like it? Well, the war is over now. We can't trust you guys. Live among us, especially like after this whole thing. So like some of you are going to get sold into slavery and some of you are going to become indentured servants, which is really just like a fancier word for slavery. And some of you might be able to move back into the praying towns, but we better not hear you saying anything about breaking the king's laws or we will behead you. Okay, just know that.
Jesus Christ. Just.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. They really did the fucking thing, yeah. Shockingly, this really curtails the conversion efforts in New England, and most of the praying towns get entirely abandoned as a result.
If it helps at all, for any tiny crumb of anything, the war was a total disaster for the English. It razed to the ground roughly 12 entire towns, tanked the economy, and killed off a bunch of people. About one of every 10 men that were in the militia died in combat, making it the deadliest and most costly war on American soil by the numbers.
On the other side, the indigenous population of New England would never recover. They lost roughly a third of their population and much of their landholdings and towns, and those that did survive faced slavery, indentured servitude, conversion, and living among the very people that eradicated their nation. So, like, you know. Yeah. If it helps, the Wampanoag tribe still exists today, so there's that. There's just...
something.
Yep.
It's not, it's not great.
And on that, wow, I'm sad now. Note, that's the episode.
Wait, you're going to end it on that? There's no, like, moral of the story?
I mean, don't have a concentration camp?
That'll do it.
A special thanks to you, our favorite listener. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. A rate and review would make the world a better place.
You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Gorilla Jokes, GUERRILLA Jokes.
And I'm at It's Nashvillain. Spelled the regular way.
Wow, regular? Wow. All right, dude.
Yeah.
All right, bro. All right, man. You can also follow the podcast where we drop incredibly specific memes and unhinged selfies at Death and Friends Podcast.
Would you like to live deliciously? Become a member of the Skeleton Army and join us on Patreon. We use it to cover our sound guy's medical bills. In order to properly write medical facts, we expose Dom to all the illnesses and ways to die we talk about on the show.
What do we do this week, Nash?
I gave him a little hug.
Whoa.
It was a tough week.
What? You gave another person a hug?
Yeah.
Damn. Speaking of Patreon, it's time to honor a member at the Brendan Fraser level. Praise be Colin Jackson.
And praise be Brendan Fraser. So check it out at patreon.com/deathandfriends.
You said it wrong again.
That's how we say it now. This is a Boston accent. That's just how
way to prove the point about how white people will call you whatever the fuck they want to call you.
For more information, visit deathandfriends.org. Join us as we make the entire internet worse.
Death is tricky to talk about, especially in the context that we did today. So please remember, you are loved, you matter, and if you don't want to be your own friend, we'll happily be your friend.
In an effort to be the best friend possible to you, I'm obligated to tell you spinach in your teeth. It's been there all day. It's terrible.
I tried to tell you earlier, but Nash said, no, it'd be funny if we let her sleep
all
day.
Yeah, now, so. Now I'm being a good friend.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like right in the front.
Yeah. Oh, it's bad. It's... Until next time, Skeleton Army. Stay spooky. Love you.
No. Like I'm your mirror image. Yeah.
To your left. Right, your left.
This has been a Knavery Inc. podcast. Go to knaveryinc.com for more details. Executive produced by Jacob Duffy Halbleib. Audio design by Dominic Guanzon. Themes and transitions by Amy Doe. Metal variant of the Death and Friends theme song by Vincent Ferway. Instagram at v.w.verweij.
The fuck is a knave?
The Wampanoag are getting pushed farther and farther to the outskirts of the rapidly growing English settlements, and their peats gets a little less comfortable. Did I say peats?
You said peats.
I did.
Their peats coffee. It's a fucking Dunkin' Towns kid.
This is the branding that we thought we weren't getting.
Yeah, right.
Their peats coffee. Start your morning right with a little less genocide. No.
Peats coffee. Now it's squirt.
We haven't ever killed anyone that we know of.
Death?
Except for respecting other people's culture and heritage.
And culture and heritage.
You pronounce the H like herbs. Heritage, yeah.
Right.
It's a real...
Chlamydia.
Pronounce honoria, actually.
Gonorrhea.
Death?
Dom, can you just play a couple bars of... It was a quiet New England town.
It was a quiet New England town.
Until it was rocked one morning.
They had the perfect marriage.
Yeah, just pick anything like that.
Anything from fucking Nightline.
Death?
The English arrest the... Nope, that's not the energy we need to go in right now. No. Mm-mm.
No.
Back it up. Right. Roll it back. Just like Walmart 2002. The English arrest... You don't remember the rollback commercials?
Don't... I'm judging you hard. I remember them. That was me going like, no, Nash. And I like how it stopped you completely from reading this. Move on,
I was
on,
like,
lady.
Excuse me, sir. I loved those smiley faces and their piece of shit techniques. And I'll die on that hill. The
That's
English
fine.
Arrest...
I don't care. Read the script.
Death?
Shh. Squirt is pee. Yeah, no, now. Yeah.
That was the greatest slang read I've ever heard in my life. I'm so proud of you. It's not even funny, dude. Fuck yeah, dude.
Death?
Let's hope that was salvable. Salvable? No, that's not. Christ.